Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight, we got a whole bunch of good stuff for you. We got some good audios and some good news. I don't know if it's good, but it's interesting. That's for sure.
Tell you what's going on in the world.
Yeah. And I want to thank everybody who joined us last night. We had a pretty good audience.
We were disappointed our guest didn't work out, but maybe you could go to his website and look him up and see what you think.
It's avaresearch.com. This was a very, very disturbing. There's a number of disturbing articles tonight that bothered me. And there's some interesting ones as well. I think... This is surprising. Huh? Mexico is to give HPV vaccines to all girls from 2012. I know.
That's that Gardasil, which you know is lousy.
But you can imagine how they were able to get into that. And I just heard tonight on national news, all right, NBC, I think it was, that they're pushing for that again, all right,
Jeez.
For all this again. They want, they want to try to get it as a mandate in Europe.
Well, listen to this. From Gardasil, there have been 29 deaths, 5,021 emergency room reports. 2017 did not recover. I'm not sure what that means. 544 seizures, 261 girls disabled, 34 had thrombosis, 27 lupus, 23 had blood clots, 15 had strokes, and 11 had vasculitis. Merrick's profits at $2.5 billion.
On Gardasil. And
on
the
Gardasil
problem is they're trying to push this on boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're trying to make this a mandatory vaccine. And it's just a sick.
And it really isn't.
And they're doing it with Mexico
ridiculous.
Now. You know, they're trying to do it. They've already done it in Mexico. Mexico plans to administer the vaccine against human papillomavirus.
They call it HPV.
Right,
easier.
Which can cause cervical cancer to all girls beginning next year, the country's health minister said Tuesday. Beginning in 2012, the HPV vaccine will be part of the normal course of shots given to girls at the age of 9, and said the health minister. This is a sick deal. That's a sick deal. No matter how you slice it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about human population reduction. I mean,
cervical cancer kills about 4,200 women in Mexico each year. The minister said while deaths from cervical cancer had fallen 47% in the country over the past two decades, there was still 13.4 cases for every 100,000 women last year. Mexican health authorities hope by making HPV vaccines universal, they can cut the mortality rate from this type of cancer by 50% for women over the age of 25. HPV is sexually transmitted, and most of the time the body can clear it on its own. However, in some cases, the infection remains and can eventually lead to cervical cancer. HPV types 16 and 18 account for 70% of cervical cancer cases worldwide, which number about 500,000 per year, according to the UN Population Fund.
And they want to do every child in Mexico. Now, if that's not population control, I don't know what is.
The disease really doesn't warrant that, since most people can clear it from their systems.
Yeah. Here's another one. Insane radioactive burning covering Japan with cesium. One second here. because it's rather a scientific thing, and it's very difficult then to read.
Well, just read the
introduction. Read the words. High levels of cesium isotopes are cropping up in dust at 42 incineration plants in 7 prefectures, including Chiba and Aiwei, in Environmental Ministry survey of Kantō and Tohoku regions show. According to the report released late Saturday, the highest cesium levels in the dust range from 95,300 becquerels in Fukushima Prefecture and 70,800 becquerels in Chiba Prefecture. But even the lowest levels in the dust exceeded 8,000 becquerels per kilogram. In 16 prefecture surveys covered 469 incinerators operators in Tokyo and Tohoku and Kantō from late June, and was reported to the panel of experts of the ministry that is discussing how to safely burn incinerator ash and dust with cesium levels above 8,000 becquerels per kilogram. The local governments have been instructed to temporarily store their ash and dust at disposal sites until the panel reaches a conclusion. And the ministry said it will ask the prefecture to continue monitoring radiation levels, so on and so forth. But it goes on. But the amazing thing is that they can't even, I mean, even when their incinerators are burning stuff that's too high for, you know, that would kill people. So that's quite frightening, I thought.
Sending it up into the air to have it blow over here.
Yeah. This one was nuts. Whether or not this is in the UK, I'm not sure. I have to double check this. I forgot. I read it earlier and I made me laugh. I think it's in the UK. Yeah.
Meal Online.
Yeah.
Now banks ringing up their cash back customers to warn them, ditch mobiles and gym membership or lose your home. Oh, nice. Cash-strapped homeowners are being telephoned by their banks and told to cut spending on luxuries or risk losing their homes. Every week, around 2,000 customers of Northern Rock Asset Management in Bradford and Bingley are being warned to slash their outlay on mobile phones, gym memberships, and even socializing to prioritize their mortgages. In an extraordinary admission, the taxpayer-owned bank said that for the first time they were doing secret credit checks to identify high-risk customers.
Can you imagine the invasion and the intrusion of these bastards?
Calling you up?
Yeah, they expect to call 30,000 in total. Although it's a standard for a credit check to be done with a loan is taken out, it is unprecedented for so many to be carried out after mortgages have been approved. And while some would argue the action is sensible precaution, others will condemn it as patronizing and unfairly singling out people. Other banks and lenders are now likely to launch their own copycat moves. UK Asset Resolution is the company set up to run North Rock Asset Management, which were both rescued by the government. The company has 616,000 mortgage customers and owes $47 billion to the taxpayer.
If confirmed, it was identifying customers who may be struggling with other debts. For example, it is using the credit checks to discover those who are falling behind with credit card payments or have stopped paying back a personal loan or their mobile phone bill. Richard Banks, the chief executive of UK Asset Resolution, said, "Some people won't cope when interest rates rise, but for others there are remedies. They need to think about what is their most important debt. It is not their credit card or renewing their Skype subscription or going out for the latest mobile technology. It's their mortgage."
Yeah.
Mr. Banks, the former director of Alliance and Leicester, said, "We want customers to look at their finances and change their behavior. Almost 20,000 families had their homes repossessed in the first half of the year because they failed to make their mortgage payments. The latest figures from Council of Mortgage Lenders showed there were 18,100 repossessions between January and June, and the number of people failing to fully pay their mortgages is almost 250,000. So
it goes on.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing, we got 1 in 3
yeah.
Homes in the United States are in foreclosure right now, and with that figure, you can imagine what they're planning to do.
I wonder if people are getting calls, if they're watching what they're spending.
This one was great concern because it's here in the United States, but it's regarding the earthquake and the nuclear power plant in Virginia. And God knows how many other power plants in the United States were affected by this.
Tritium trouble. Nuke fears rise with quake. Self-policing. After the nuclear catastrophe, this is from The Hook. After the nuclear catastrophe that followed the earthquake and tsunami in Japan last spring, some Central Virginia activists cautioned that a similar nightmare could unfold right here at the Dominion-operated North Anna nuclear generating plant in Louisa County.
Dominion operates the one here in Connecticut, too,
yep.
Which is the one in Waterford.
Yep.
All right, so.
Despite Dominion's assurance that the plants made it through the August 23rd earthquake unscathed, activists contend that the quake, which measured 5.8 on the Richter scale and had an epicenter just 11 miles from the plant, may have been more catastrophic than anyone is admitting. New information bolsters their fears. On Monday, August 29, the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission announced that the quake may in fact have produced force that exceeded the North Anna plant specifications, and that the commission is sending a special augmented inspection team to assess the damage. Initial reviews determined that the plant may have exceeded the ground motion for which it was designed, says the release, which also assures that no significant damage to safety systems has been identified. That small consolation to one prominent nuclear watchdog who says it's not what's above the ground that gives him the greatest concern. Good point. Central to the issue is a mile of buried pipe under the plant that carries radioactive water, says Paul Gunter. Gunter cites recent problems with underground water pipes at nuclear plants in Illinois and Vermont, where millions of gallons of water contaminated with radioactive hydrogen isotope tritium seeped into groundwater, even as the power companies that own the plants denied for years that it was happening. The result of those leaks and public concealment by the Exelon Entergy power companies at the Braidwood Station plant in Illinois and at the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant was not additional government oversight, as one might expect, says Gunter, but merely the creation of two voluntary programs that allowed the power companies to inspect their own pipes and groundwater, and then I report the findings to the commission. Good, they're so fucking dishonest. Here's an industry that has hidden these leaks, that is now self-reporting and overseeing itself to the NRC, says a disgusted Gunter. Indeed, at North Anna, newly arrived government inspectors won't be conducting their own tests of the miles of underground pipes, and the assumption that those pipes didn't sustain damage during the earthquake, which locked two Louisiana County schools out of commission and caused cracks in the Washington Monument some 90 miles away, might be laughable to Gunter if he weren't convinced of potential grave public danger.
How can an uninspectable...
Inaccessible
buried pipe have integrity, Gunter asks. When this augmented inspection team walks into the site, they'll be walking over the burned pipe that could be leaking. Buried pipe, rather. We have a limited number of inspector resources, the Technologies Commission spokesperson, Roger Hanna, who says that when it comes to the pipes, inspectors will make sure we see what Dominion is doing. And Hannah scoffs at the notion that tritium, already considered by the commission as a much lesser danger than uranium, could leak from damaged pipes into the groundwater and go unnoticed by inspectors.
Huh.
If you had some issue, you'd see some leakage fairly quickly. said Anna, noting that no tests have revealed radioactive leakage anywhere in the North, at the North Anna. Dominion spokesperson Richard Zucker, who offers reassurance that all is well at North Anna, above and underground, and we do have ways to detect if there are any leakage in the water, who says that the only damage at the facility was cosmetic and didn't affect nuclear function, and who insists Dominion's will do whatever is necessary to verify that everything is intact. Gunther, however, says he believes Dominion is going far enough to protect the public. And given the industry history and what's been done before, Dominion should be distributing bottled water to the town of Mineral and not the residents of Lake Anna, he said indefinitely. So, there you go. That's the way it is. And that was from The Hook.
And you want to build more nuclear plants?
Yeah. That's shit, crazy. This one I wanted to play tonight. It's about 5 minutes long.
Okay.
But it's this is fascinating because there are 85 videos now. Another video was released yesterday, and now it has been carefully vetted, but it appears to be quite genuine. That clearly shows a cruise missile from another angle hitting the Pentagon, and that was from Gordon Duff, senior editor of Veterans Today. And told Press TV, U.S. at Dusk on Tuesday. And Duff said the CNN reporters at the scene of the 9/11 event in 2001 said that they had not seen any plane wreckage after the attack. According to reliable reports from alien airline pilots, it would be impossible for the plane and any pilot at all, including the top Air Force and Navy pilots in the U.S., to have flown a plane in such a way, the Pentagon, he added. And let's go to that right now.
Well,
the statement
you've made is not only so credible, it's been leaked accidentally by members of the U.S. government who, in describing it, even Secretary Rumsfeld at one time referred to it, and we'll call it a mistake, as the missile attack on the Pentagon. Now, the TV show in the U.S., a little over a year ago, by former Governor Jesse Ventura, hired scientists, airline pilots, interviewed people who were at the scene. I have friends who were at the scene. And not only is there no evidence that a plane hit, and there were 85 videos, a second video was released yesterday. Now, it hasn't been carefully vetted, but it appears to be quite genuine. That clearly shows a cruise missile from another angle hitting the Pentagon. We have a second video of this. Now, there are people who dispute the video, but we have people that dispute every video, and frankly, it's become that kind of issue. But the people at the scene, the CNN reporters at the scene, saw no plane wreckage. And then we have reliable reports from airline pilots, and this is on the video that we put on our website at Veterans Today, stating that it would be impossible for the plane and for any pilot at all, including the top Air Force and Navy pilots in the U.S., the Top Gun instructors, couldn't have flown a plane to have accomplished what was accomplished. We have engineers at Boeing, the company that manufactured the plane that supposedly hit the Pentagon, that said it couldn't fly that fast, it can't fly that low, it can't make those turns, it couldn't have been there. And then, of course, we have the close photographs of the Pentagon showing no wreckage of any kind. And the kind of debris field you see from a plane wreck, it sometimes covers a square mile. But what you get, of course, isn't just the plane wreckage, the tail, the engines, the lawn torn up, of course, which was pristine that day. You don't get a hole 7-8 feet across, but you'd have a hole where the wings hit over 120 feet across. None of that had happened. Nobody could fly it. The plane couldn't do it. It didn't do the damage. And now we have a second video showing, and the missile looks to be, at the distance we have, the missile actually is within, it's a distance shot, It's 8 pixels. It's rectangular. It's white. The distance looks from nose to tail looks to be 17 to 20 feet. The speed, I haven't estimated it yet, but supersonic. And it has no wings. If it has a tail, it's very small. But this is a very small, we have the film. It's very small. And a year ago, we had scientific proof that a plane could not have been responsible. This plane they talk about that hit the Pentagon went off radar for 28 minutes, meaning, as far as I'm concerned, if something goes off radar in the United States and we have an air defense system here beyond anything imaginable, well beyond anything reported, it had to have landed. Now, there's no question, no plane hit the Pentagon. It was a missile. Who did it or why it was done is conjecture. But we just know, we know it wasn't a plane. We're willing to prove it isn't a plane, and we'll prove it in any court of law. And we have now what we hadn't had. We have more solid evidence to go with a wealth of solid evidence that we've put together for 10 years. And, of course, it's our belief that members of the U.S. government and one other foreign government were complicit in the planning and execution of the attacks on 9/11. We get the anniversary coming up in a few days, and it's very distressing for so many of us, for so many veterans here in the United States, knowing that their own government was responsible for this, and they're going to come out, parade around, and lie to us again. And this isn't 2001. This is 2011. We know they're lying, and we can't take it anymore. We've had, this is just too much.
There you go, finally. That's from Gordon Duff, who's the a senior editor for Veterans Today. And I just think that, it's about time.
Let's hope it just doesn't fall on deaf ears.
Yeah, it's just quite frightening, actually. In case that didn't surprise you, or maybe it did surprise you, there's something else that will surprise you. And the 13 most evil government experiments conducted against its citizens.
In the U.S.?
Yep.
That's a sick thing, isn't it?
Yeah. We may not want to read the entire paragraph. We can just read the...
Mind control, child abuse...
One, right.
Project MK Ultra.
It starts, the U.S. government has been caught conducting an insane amount of vile, inhumane, and grisly experiments on humans without their consent and often without their knowledge. So in light of recent news of the U.S. infecting Guatemalans and STDs, here are the 13 most evil, for lack of a better word, cases of human testing as conducted by the United States of America. Get ready to become one of those conspiracy theory nuts, because after this list, you will never fully trust your government again. Right? So the first one, and we know this, we've talked about it. We had Hank Garavelli on, who wrote a full book on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mind control, child abuse, Project MK Ultra subproject.
The CIA ran Project MK Ultra and paid Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron for subproject 1668, which would be experiments involving mind-altering substances. The entire goal of the project was to probe examination into the methods of influence and controlling the mind and being able to extract information from resisting minds. So in order to accomplish this, the doctor took patients admitted to his Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal and conducted therapy on them. The patients were mostly taken in for issues like bipolar depression and anxiety disorders. Oh, these poor souls. The treatment they received was life-altering and scarring. In that period, he was paid from 1957 to 1964. Cameron administered electroconvulsive therapy at 30 to 40 times the normal power. He would put patients into drug-induced comas for months on end and play back tapes of simple statements or repetitive noises over and over again. The victims forgot how to talk, forgot about their parents, and suffered serious amnesia. And all of this was performed on Canadian citizens because the CIA wasn't willing to wish such operations on Americans. To ensure the project remained funded, Cameron in one scheme took his experiments upon admitted children, and in one situation had the child engage in sex with high-ranking government officials and filmed it. He and other MKUltra officers would blackmail the officials to ensure more funding.
Whoa.
Oh, what a sick dude he was. I wonder where he is now. Maybe he's dead.
Number two, mustard gas tested on soldiers via involuntary gas chambers. As bioweapon research intensified in the 1940s, officials also began testing its repercussions and defenses on the Army itself. In order to test the effectiveness of various bioweapons, officials were known to have sprayed mustard gas and other skin-burning, lung-ruining chemicals like Lewisite on soldiers without their consent or knowledge of the experiment happening to them. They also tested the effectiveness of gas masks and protective clothing by locking soldiers in a gas chamber and exposing them to mustard gas and Lewisite without evoking the gas chamber image of Nazi Germany. Effects of Lewisite. Lewisite is a gas that can easily penetrate clothing and even rubber. And upon contact with the skin, the gas immediately causes extreme pain, itching, swelling, and even a rash. And large fluid-filled blisters developed 12 hours after exposure in the form of intensely severe chemical burns, and that's just skin contact with the gas. Inhaling of the gas causes a burning pain in the lungs, sneezing, vomiting, and pulmonary edema. Effects of the mustard gas, symptomless until about 24 hours after exposure, and mustard gas was mutagenic and carcinogenic properties that have killed many subjected to it. Its primary effects include severe burns that turn into yellow fluid, leaking boils over a period of time. Although treatment is available, mustard gas burns heal very, very slowly and are extremely painful. And the burns the gas leaves on the skin are sometimes irreparable. And it was also rumored that, along with the soldiers, patients at VA hospitals were being used as guinea pigs for medical experiments involving biowarfare chemicals. Oh. But that all experiments were charged to be known as observations to ward off suspicion.
U.S. grants immunity to surgery monster. As head of Japan's infamous Unit 731, a covert biological and chemical warfare research and development unit of the Imperial Japanese Army during World War II, Dr. Shiro Ishii, head of medicine, carried out violent human experimentations of tens of thousands during the Second Sino-Japanese War and World War II. Ishii was responsible for testing vivisection techniques without any anesthesia on human prisoners. For the uninitiated, vivisection is the act of conducting experimental surgery on living creatures with central nervousness and examining their insides for scientific purposes. So basically, he was giving unnecessary surgery to prisoners by opening them all the way up, keeping them alive, and not using any anesthetic. Oh. During these experiments, he would force pregnant women to abort their babies. He also played God by subjecting his prisoners to change in psychological conditions and inducing strokes, heart attacks, frostbite, and hypothermia. Ishii considered these subjects logs. Following imminent defeat in 1945, Japanese blew up the Unity 731 complex, and Ishii ordered all the remaining logs to be executed. Not soon after, Ishii was arrested, and then the respected General Douglas MacArthur allegedly struck a deal with Ishii. If the U.S. granted Ishii immunity from his crimes, he must exchange all-germ warfare database on human experimentation. So Ishii got away with his crimes because the U.S. became interested in the results of his research. While not directly responsible for these acts, the actions of the American government certainly illustrated it was more than willing to condone human torture for advancements in biological warfare that could kill even more people.
And it gave immunity to all the Nazis, for Christ's sake, so they came into this country
as well. Holy evil people.
And they wound up setting up the CIA. Not a surprise considering the past resume, Ishii remained alive until 1959, performing research on bioweaponry and probably thinking up more plans to annihilate people in different Dr. Giggles-esque ways to his dying day. Pretty sick shit, huh?
Yeah.
Deadly chemical sprays on American cities. Talking about chemtrails, folks, but this is even worse. Showing once again that the U.S. always tends to test out worst-case scenarios by getting them to first and the advent of biochemical warfare in the mid-20th century. The Army, CIA, and government conducted a series of warfare simulations upon American cities to see how the effects would play out in the events of an actual chemical attack. They conducted the following airstrike and naval attacks. The CIA released a whooping cough virus on Tampa Bay using boats and so caused a whooping cough epidemic. 12 people died. The Navy sprayed San Francisco with biological pathogens, and in consequence, many citizens developed pneumonia. And upon Savannah, Georgia, and Avon Park, Florida, the Army released millions of mosquitoes in the hopes that they would spread yellow fever and dengue fever. The swarm left Americans struggling with fevers,
typhoid,
respiratory problems, and the worst, stillborn children. Even worse was that after the swarm, the Army came in disguise as public health workers. Their secret intention the entire time were giving aid to the victims was to study and chart out the long-term effects of the illnesses they were suffering.
Nice.
God, these people have no... I mean, these people are ruthless bastards.
Here's a... That
run our government and military.
U.S. apologized for infecting Guatemalans with STDs.
Yeah. To do this, they used infected prostitutes and let them loose on unknown prison inmates, insane asylum patients, and soldiers. When spreading the disease through prostitution didn't work as well as they hoped, they just instead went for the inoculation route.
Yeah, the one they use here.
Hmm. Researchers poured syphilis bacteria into men's penises on their forearms and faces. In some cases, they even inoculated the men through spinal punctures. After all the infections were transmitted, researchers gave most of the subjects treatment, although as many as one-third of them could have been left untreated, even if that was the intention of the study in the first place. On October 1st, 2010, Hillary Clinton apologized for the events, and new research has gone on to see if anyone affected is still alive and afflicted with syphilis. Since many subjects never got penicillin, it's possible and likely that someone spread it to the future generations. Now, what else are they doing to us? Number six is secret human experiments to test the effects of the atomic bomb.
We
know that.
Yeah.
One.
Injecting prisoners with Agent Orange.
Oh, yeah. My God, look at these kids. The left of the video of what effect Agent Orange can do to children or parents affected.
Or even exposed to it.
Yeah.
I don't think I could watch that.
Yeah. Everyone knows that was...
Operation Paperclip. While the Nuremberg trials were being conducted and the ethics and rights of humanity were under investigation, the U.S. was secretly taking in Nazi scientists and giving them American identities. We know about that. Infecting Puerto Rico with cancer. Dr. Cornelius Rhodes was sponsored by the Rockefeller Institute to conduct experiments in Puerto Rico. He infected Puerto Rican citizens with cancer cells, presumably to study the effects. 13 of them died.
There's a picture of him on Time magazine.
Oh, a horrible man.
As the man of the year.
He also became vice president of the American Cancer Society. Yeah, he spread cancer.
Good, yeah. The Puerto Ricans, now this is his quote, what's most striking is that the accusation stemmed from a note he allegedly wrote. Now, ready for this?
This is what he said about Puerto Ricans.
Are the dirtiest, laziest, most degenerate, and thievish race of men ever to inhabit this sphere. I have done my best to further the process of extermination by killing off 8 and transplanting cancer into several more. All the physicians take delight in the abuse and torture of the unfortunate subjects. A man that seems to be hell-bent on killing Puerto Rico through a cancer infestation would not seem a suitable candidate to be elected by the U.S. to be in charge of the chemical warfare projects and receive a seat on the United States Atomic Energy Commission, right? But that's exactly what happened. He also became vice president of the American Cancer Society.
Oh, my God.
Any shocking documentation that would have happened during his chemical warfare period would probably have been destroyed by now.
No, they probably used, that was great. That's just what they wanted. They wanted a person like that.
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about human depopulation. And the
Pentagon treats black cancer patients with extreme radiation and probably killed them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That happened in the 60s.
Let's see what else is on this.
Operation Midnight Climax. Not sure what that is.
It's a government experiment that when you Google it has completely different image results than...
Room for one more?
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Good boy.
Oh. Alone on an island? Oh, it's going to be a good weekend.
On September 2nd.
Sorry, so...
Where are all these sharks going here?
Your pulse will raise.
I just want to put them down.
Your blood will rush.
What is this, some kind of sick game?
And your worst fears will surface. Shark Night 3D.
Hey, Lord. Show you 2D. September 2nd.
Yeah, just turn it off.
Yeah, I can't. I can't. There's no way to turn the sky off.
Just turn off the sound.
I did.
Okay.
So it was an audio pop-up. What a joke, huh?
Here's a government experiment that when you Google it has completely different image results than the website. Operation Midnight Climax involved safe houses in New York and San Francisco built for the sole purpose to study LSD effects on non-consenting individuals. But in order to lure the individuals there, the CIA made these safe houses out to be, wait for it, brothels. Prostitutes on the CIA payroll, yes, there is such a thing, lured clients back to the houses. Instead of having sex with them, though, they dosed them with a number of substances, most famously LSD.
This also involved extensive use of marijuana. The experiments were monitored behind a two-way mirror, kind of like a sick, twisted peep show. And furthermore, it's alleged that the officials who ran the experiment described them as, "It was fun, fun, fun. Where else could a red-blooded American boy lie, kill, cheat, steal, and pillage with the sanction and bidding of the all-highest?" The most horrifying part was the idea of dosing non-consenting adults with drugs they couldn't possibly know the effect of. Embedded is a video of a soldier talking about Operation Midnight Climax and his experiences with the CIA and the government.
Let's play that.
I think we should, yeah.
Yes, I'll go up.
Yeah, I'll go right back to that. I just wanted to mention fallout radiation on unsuspecting Pacific territories, and of course the horrible Tuskegee, where they infected the syphilis on the black guys. But let's go to the Greensboro massacre and exposing the covert operation here. About 8 minutes ago.
Mentioning a while ago, it's not only just the CIA, but it's others too. We had a program recently, which you may remember, about the Greensboro massacres, in which the Klan and the Nazis, in broad daylight in front of TV cameras, shot down 5 labor organizers and killed them in Greensboro, North Carolina. And it came out by the investigations that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agents was working with the Nazis. Indeed, he was the one who gave them the names of the people to be shot. Also, there was FBI and local police complicity with the Klan members. As a matter of fact, it's come out that the FBI itself established over 40 chapters of the Klan over the years in North Carolina alone. These revelations would be a felony now.
Yeah, it would, exactly.
If this passes.
It would be a felony to reveal such information to the American public. Well, government of, by, and for the people is soon to be a thing of the past in the United States.
What this will do is to put the CIA, the FBI, and these other government agencies outside of the realm of public criticism and even discussion.
Or law.
Yeah.
Outside of the law.
Right.
Because they've broken every law of man and God in the activities they have conducted, the experimentation on American citizens, for example, with chemicals and disease, the propaganda of the United States breaking and entering. Colonel White's famous words about where else can a red-blooded boy lie, kill, cheat, steal, rape, and pillage in the name of the All-Highest. Now they will be able to...
Who was this?
This was Colonel George M. White, one of the founders of the CIA, who eventually directed the MK Ultra program.
Oh.
And he was retiring. He and I overlapped by about 4 years. He came out of retirement to address my mid-career seminar and telling about how we put the CIA together and we did this, that, and the other. In his letters, memoirs, he wrote and then allowed it to be published, that statement. Where else could a red-blooded American boy lie, kill, cheat, steal, rape, and pillage with the blessings of the All-Highest? And that was before they had an Official Secrets Act to protect their activities.
John, there's been very few people in this country that have actually told us what the CIA has been up to and exposed some of their misdeeds, et cetera. You, of course, and a few other former agents have written some books and given lectures criticizing agents' activities. This would be impossible in the future, would it not be?
We will never know the truth and the details, the blood and gore, the extent of responsibility and culpability for the CIA's program in Nicaragua right now, unless someone like Reagan or in his administration, a top official, chooses to stand up and denounce what's happening, because top officials are exempt from these laws. But we will never know the truth about, for example, the Shah and the evacuation of Iran, and which was a debacle, I was told, by a friend of mine who was close to a third friend of mine who was part of the CIA security establishment in Iran, who said it was a debacle that far exceeded the evacuation of Vietnam, the evacuation of the United States from Iran. And this story will never come out. And the many other stories, the assassinations that probably are being planned today, such as the coup in Chile or the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, these sort of things are going on, but the public won't know about them in the future.
Why has the government been so outraged by this publication and putting so much heat on them? I don't think there's any other publication in America that's had so much government pressure put on them than...
Well, you have two forces in the government functioning here. You have one is a defensive outrage against being attacked. Secret police organizations don't like to be exposed and attacked. That's the same anger that they focus at me. People who are performing activities that the full range of the society, the 90% of the society, would describe as depraved, people who are doing this while functioning under the cover of being legitimate State Department diplomats, prestigious cover positions, don't like to have their activities and names published for what they really are. This is traditional anywhere in the world. The goon squads in Chile don't like to be attacked, nor does the KGB in Russia to be attacked and exposed. But nowhere else in the world do they become as self-righteous and as vindictive as they do in Washington, where the United States ambivalence, the duplicity, the Jekyll and Hyde aspect of the United States character, where we profess such high ideals, and yet traditionally we have exploited, we have engaged in activities that included dropping atom bombs on women and children in Japan, eliminating large elements of the Indian population of this country, and in the past 30 years killing well over 800,000 people in the third world under circumstances that can only be called terrorism, but doing it, pretending all the while to be idealistic, high-minded, human rights-oriented, freedom-loving people. Now, these values are brought together in the CIA, where people are diplomats by cover and CIA agents by trade. And when they have themselves exposed and have their children, their family, their friends find out that, hey, you weren't really a nice diplomat all these years. You were, in fact, running the Phoenix program in Vietnam that killed 40,000 people, including many innocent people. This isn't something that makes these people feel good, and they get very angry. Moreover, the nation in the mid-70s was clearly close to closing down the CIA, to rejecting this kind of activity. So they were fighting for their existence. And there you get into the other driving force of their reaction against Lew Wolf and Bill Shapp and myself and others. It's just simply exploitation, working the thing against the people who... there is a theory, which is, of course, nonsense, that Phil Agee was sent by the CIA to reveal names to create an atmosphere which would lead eventually to an Official Secrets Act. Now, that is certainly nonsense, and the extent to which it discredits very honorable men, you know, but the fact is that they are exploiting this revelation of names extensively to effect the passage of an Official Secrets Act. They've tried every other way over the past 30 years, every other way you could conceive of. They didn't succeed until modern times and the curious vacillation of the American public and Washington and the senators and congressmen in terms of just pure conservatism and callousness.
And I think that American people really have to understand that it is their rights which are being threatened here. Now, we are, among many people, ones who reject the idea that it's more important to protect our rights than people in other countries. Clearly, that is not the case. The minute we are involved in the torture or in the death of a single person in another country, our rights are being abridged and our tax money, to say the least, is being used.
And our humanity is being violated because we're being asked to accept inhuman acts perpetuated in our name as Americans.
Plus the fact that it eventually will come home. They use it successfully overseas. They'll use it on the United States citizens as well.
That was an interview by KKK Cruz Burrow Massacre. No, it was a CIA operative who is revealing what the CIA actually does. And those are the 13 most evil U.S. government experiments on humans. And I want to thank a Facebook friend of mine for sending that to us as well. And that was my friend Erin. And she, and I wanted to say that that was from Ranker, ranker.com, so you can check that out, please, and I think you'll be amazed. Just a couple more minutes left of the show, and I wanted to mention a couple of other things that are going on here. The Israelis are getting ready for the UN to recognize Palestine as a state, and boy, are they getting ready. Israelis to unleash dogs on the Palestinians,
right.
And this just came up, and they've got other things that they're doing too. They're handing them grenades and all the settlers. The Israelis to unleash dogs on the Palestinians. Would you like to read that?
Sure.
Or do you think it?
The civilian dog handler, battalion of Judea and Samaria, the Israel-occupied West Bank, is to provide the animals. The group says these canines will be used against potential rallies by the Palestinians in support of their bid to seek recognition by the UN, where it is reported. These dogs are trained to attack upon command. said American-Israeli settler leader and dog trainer Mike Guzovsky. A promotional video has been provided simulating dog attacks on Palestinian infiltrator. Meanwhile, there are reports suggesting that Israeli military is arming settlers with tear gas and stun grenades to confront Palestinians ahead of the planned Palestinian independence announcement. The Palestinian Authority is to formally present the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon with a request for membership in the World Board of Body on September 20th when the UN General Assembly is holding its 66th session. Israeli Minister of Military Affairs has paid around $22 million to purchase so-called crowd dispersal weaponry to confront expected protests.
So that's happening. So they're sticking. They've got dogs. They're giving trained attack dogs to the settlers to attack the Palestinians. Amazing. Okay. This was fascinating too, and open season hunting black people in Libya. And this is from Ukraine. I probably won't go through the whole thing,
yeah.
But just like a writer says, rebels commit Ku Klux Klan type atrocities against black people in Libya. Media habitually tells us that the Libyan rebels are a noble freedom fighter struggling against a bloodthirsty tyrant. But after all the buckets of blood, of half-truths and blatant lies that news poured out on our heads, treating us viewers like brainless sheep and feeding us half-baked reports that often got disproved the next day, some of us started to look further and investigate. What they found out is extremely disturbing, say for the very beginning of the war. We've been hearing reports about Gaddafi's black mercenaries. We even saw photos and videos of several people that supposedly were these mercenaries, but the whole truth is much more complicated and scary. Yes, there indeed are several divisions of black Africans and citizens of Chad in the Army of Libya. That is formed on the principle of territorial militia, but they can hardly be considered mercenaries, not more than French Foreign Legion or non-American citizens in the U.S. Army. In general, the status of black men of Libya's army varies units as civil servants. In a country with 6 million inhabitants, one-third are black, which are the most oppressed group in the country. Would it not be easier for the rebels to call for their solidarity and ask them to join the rebel ranks? But not only black Libyans do not join the rebellion, they flee in terror. And the first wave of reports and evidence of beatings of the black Africans began in February and March. The rebels, under the trademark of fighting with the mercenaries from Chad, were slaughtering all black people with no mercy. They even started the most various YouTube videos in their actions filmed. The victim was this Libyan citizen. Back in early March, the Human Rights Watch even warned black migrant workers on the need to flee the revolutionary terrain. And the article goes on and on, but there is definitely an outright war, racial war, against the black people in Libya by the rebels. So, fascinating, I think. Let's see, we got about 5 more minutes. Let's see if we got another. Oh, yeah, I wanted to play this video.
Which one is that, Leo?
This one is about the hundreds of protests on unemployment in L.A.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good one.
And it was pretty interesting because Los Angeles, but California has the highest unemployment rate in the country. That's upwards of over 12%.
Really?
And let me play this video for you.
Hundreds of Los Angeles residents from struggling communities gathered to promote job creation in the upcoming budget negotiations. The residents are attending a jobs summit to develop better ways to get people back to work. The summit followed a protest during which demonstrators targeted corporations as a main reason why so many residents are without a paycheck. This comes after California's unemployment rate increased to 12%. And job creation slowed compared to previous months. This has residents concerned that the state's fragile recovery
is faltering. Right now in Los Angeles, 1 in 4 workers are unemployed or underemployed.
Jacob Hay is with Good Jobs LA, a community organization created to spur job growth in Los Angeles. Hay says families are frustrated that Congress is focused on the wrong problems and doing nothing to tackle unemployment. He says instead the debate in Washington is dominated by protecting tax breaks for corporations that he says have already recovered from the economic crisis.
Corporations in this country are sitting on $2 trillion in cash, but failing to invest in the jobs struggling communities need.
And despite reports of recovery, a new study shows that jobs are not coming to Los Angeles. The study from Good Jobs LA shows 22 companies have announced layoffs of 100 or more workers in Los Angeles between June and September of this year.
The unemployment percentages here are higher than they are in the rest of the state and much higher than they are in the rest of the country. So we're really one of the key places in the whole country where jobs are desperately needed.
More than 2 million Californians are unemployed, and one-third of them have been jobless for a year or more. Economists say the majority of the job losses were the result of the housing market crash. Demonstrators say they're upset that lawmakers have failed to make the right investments to turn the economy around.
There's no money, so there's no job. And you do all the right things, get your education, go to school, get your degree, and you come out and you have no job. So how are we supposed to live?
Demonstrators at the summit say they remain hopeful that U.S. President Barack Obama will address their concerns when he presents his jobs plan next week. And economists say there's not much California can do to bring immediate relief to the economy. They say it will be at least until next year before real progress can occur. Ross Frazier, Press TV, Los Angeles.
So, there's a grim picture of employment possibilities, huh?
Yeah,
I feel so sorry for people that are out of work. They try so hard to find work, they just can't. It must be so discouraging.
And that just about. I thought this is kind of an interesting thing to end with tonight. Go through this. There's a protest. Let's see, we've got about 2 minutes left. This should cover it. Tahrir style occupation planned in U.S. Organizers of the October 2011 movement in the United States had planned to occupy Freedom Plaza in the Capitol in a move similar to the occupation of Tahrir Square. We are going to occupy Freedom Plaza in the middle of Washington, D.C., the name of which is very similar to this course to Tahrir Square in Cairo, Egypt. And from there, we are going to expand to shut down offices, buildings, streets, hallways, to strictly nonviolently resist what our government is doing, said David Swanson, a member of the movement, on Monday. In an interview with Press TV, Swanson further said that the occupation that is set to begin on October 6th coincides with a 10-year mark in the war in Afghanistan that they have now suggested may continue for another 13 years or so. The aim of the occupation is to raise taxes for the wealthy and corporations and the wars and the country is engaged in, and to protect the social safety net by strengthening Social Security and Medicare, amongst others. Moreover, Swanson added that the occupation will continue until the group believes that they have achieved some movement in the right direction, some success, some reversal of the course that others govern and is on. And the occupation is being organized at a website called October2011.org. The movement further explains it has been inspired by the courageous and nonviolent uprisings in Tunisia, Egypt, Bahrain, Yemen, and Greece and Spain. Yes.
Swanson,
good luck, guy. You know, I hope you get more than 100 people down there. And they haven't been getting too many. So, good luck. And that's the end of our show. I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight and hope that you will...
And you will talk to them tomorrow night.
Yes, and when I join me in the fourth dimension...
Esoteric knowledge. Good night, folks. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.